Recording. So today is Tuesday, November 24th, Chet Kislev, and we are continuing in the middle of Perek Kaf Gimel, Chapter 23 of Shmuel Bet. For those who are interested, my son Shai came home for 60 days from Israel. Shai, wave. Okay. And I use his bedroom as my office, and you should all admire his newly organized bookshelves behind me. Okay. Vayardu shlosha miashloshim rosh vayavo el ktsir el David el ma'arat adulam v'chayat plishtim chona be'emek rafaim. So it sounds like it's a continuation of last week because it says three of the 30 chiefs went down, but we're going to see most of the commentators say that this is a new group of three, and we're not going to learn their names. So keep that in mind. This new group of three are completely nameless. So last week, we only had a group of three in Sefer Shmuel. In Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles mentioned three, but only named two of them. And this time we have another group of three, and none of them are named. We're going to see reasons for that. So three of the 30 chiefs went down, and they came in the harvest time. So why is that relevant to know when it is? To David, to the cave of Adulam, and the troop of Philistines were encamped in the valley of Rephaim, Emek Rephaim. Many of you have probably eaten a good meal in a restaurant on the street Emek Rephaim in Jerusalem. So if you remember, if you were in my class a long time ago, we spent a lot of time talking about this Adulam. So when he was in Adulam, it was a cave, and it was actually the lowest point of David's life when he was fleeing from Shaul, from Saul, trying to kill him. And he only had a band of 400 followers, and I like to call those 400 followers the deplorables, because the text itself actually describes them as tax evaders and other not very good people. And so this is a very low point in David's life, to the point where he had to escape into this cave, into this place called Adulam. And we looked, I think it was the Ikra de Kala, some Hasidish work, who related this Adulam to another Adulami, an Adulamite man that we are going to read about in a few weeks in the Parsha, in Parshat Vayeshev, with the story of Yehuda. So if you remember, David comes from the tribe of Yehuda, and Yehuda, at his lowest point, after he initiates the sale of Yosef to the Egyptians, he then goes down to an Adulamite man. And that story, it's all chapter 38 of Genesis. It unravels to the point where he completely forsakes any responsibility he has to his daughter-in-law Tamar. And she dresses up as a prostitute and gets impregnated by him. And that is the seeds of Mashiach. She has twins, Zerach and Peretz. And Peretz is the ancestor of King David. So the Hasidic work that we looked at said that when David found himself in the cave of Adulam, that actually gave him hope, knowing about his ancestor Yehuda, that Adulam, this Adulamite man in Yehuda's life, was also part of the lowest point in his life after which he rose up. And so this is the lowest point of David's life, after which he is going to eventually defeat Shaul and become the accepted king of everybody, with a few other blips in the way that we saw, including his own children rebelling against him. Okay, so that's just, we talked a lot about this cave of Adulam when we taught that. Okay, so Yadalid, V'David az b'mitzudah, u'matzah plishtim az beit lechem. So David was in the stronghold, and the garrison of the plishtims was in Beit Lechem. So Beit Lechem is actually where David comes from. So it must have been very disconcerting for him to see that the plishtim are taking hold of his hometown. Tetvav, v'yitaved David. David desired, v'yomar, and he said, mi yashkeni mayim mibor beit lechem asher b'sha'ar. Who would give me a drink from the well? Well, this is interesting. It says well here, right? But if you look at the nikudot here, and if you look at the Divrei Hayamim, so if you remember from last week, there's a parallel passage in Divrei Hayamim that's almost identical to what we're reading in Samuel. Divrei Hayamim, again, is Chronicles in English. I highlighted here all the differences, or I don't know if I got them all, but most of the differences. So you see in Divrei Hayamim, it says, it's spelled Bet Vav Resh, okay? And in ours, it's spelled Bet Aleph Resh, okay? But look very carefully. If you know how to say well in Hebrew, it's a Be'er, okay? So you would expect to see under the Bet two little dots, and under the Aleph, under the Bet two little vertical dots, and under the Aleph two parallel dots to pronounce Be'er. But the only vowel you see here is this dot above the Bet, which is the same vowelization as the word bor. Okay, so what's the difference between these two words? So a be'er is a well, and a bor is a pit or a cistern. There's actually a very interesting similar appearance of this in Jeremiah. I forgot which chapter, I meant to look it up, where Jeremiah is accusing the people of ignoring the flow of living waters and going to the be'er, the well, but it's vowelized the same way as this is actually a bor. So the commentators there explain that Jeremiah's chastising them and saying, you don't take from the living waters, which of course would be God, but rather a be'er would be second best, because the be'er is when you dig and you get flowing waters that are coming up. So it involves effort, as opposed to just the flowing waters that are coming out of nowhere, right? That they're just there for you. The be'er, you have to dig. It involves effort, but they still flow from the well. But the bor, the cistern, is someplace where you actually have to put and store water. There are, we're doing some real estate shopping in Israel right now. We haven't found anything. But a lot of the places in Israel, when they start doing construction of some of these really old houses, they find a bor maim, a cistern, of when they actually did have to store water. So you see the designers and architects make really cool rooms out of these cisterns, because they're usually incredibly high ceilings and really interesting architectural rooms. So that those were in use, I think, as recently as like the 1800s. So in the Jeremiah passage, it's spelled Be'er, so as not to insult them too much, but you read it as bor, because we really know that how stupid the Jewish people were in that time, that they didn't just ignore the flowing waters, they didn't get it from a well that they dug and it flowed into the they put all their water into a cistern, and then Jeremiah describes it as cracked. So it wouldn't even stay in there. And that's sort of the difference between davening to Hashem, who's there always for us, and davening to an idol who isn't even a well. It's a cistern. It's not even a good cistern. It's one that's cracked. Okay? So I don't know what the significance is, why it's vocalized as a cistern here. Maybe he's really pining for his own cistern and his own house, of the water that would be stored in his house. But he doesn't want to get too personal, so he just says he desires the water of Beit Lechem. If any of you have traveled around Israel, I don't know if you have as sensitive palates as I do, only in this one area for some reason, but the water is actually very different in different areas of Israel. So we were living in Tel Aviv when I was pregnant with my oldest son, and outside of Tel Aviv, and the water there was fine, but I was learning in Jerusalem, and I would stay with cousins every once in a while in Jerusalem, and during that pregnancy, I couldn't even brush my teeth with the Jerusalem water. It would make me have morning sickness. It was so gross. So I hate to say anything bad about Jerusalem, but the water there does not taste as good as the water in other parts of Israel. So that's just to give you a sense of how David might actually pine for a specific location's water, and why he would be pining for it. Okay, so that was a lot of tangents. I apologize on this word and this pasuk. Okay, so David voices this desire out loud. And remember, he's the king. And even if he's not the king now, he has these 400 followers who really want him to be the recognized king. And they hear him say, "Oh, that I could only drink from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." Notice he's not asking anyone to get him that water. He's just voicing this desire. So what happens in Tet Zayin? Ve'yivkeu shloshet ha'giborim b'machaneh plishtim. So these three heroes, who again are nameless, they broke through the plishtim camp. Ve'yishavu mayim mibor Beit Lechem, and they drew the water from this well or pit of Beit Lechem, asher b'shar, that was at the gate. Ve'yisuv ha'yivu al David, and they carried it and they brought it to David. V'lo aval lishtotam, but David didn't want to drink it. Ve'yasech otam la'Hashem, and he poured it out to Hashem. So vayasech, you might know the word nisachim, which are libations, so that they would do during the time of the korbanot, of the sacrifices. All the sacrifices would call for a wine libation sometimes, and there were even water libations, usually associated during Sukkot, that we're going to see mentioned in one of the commentaries. So rather than drinking it, he poured it out as a libation to God. Vayomer, and he said, "Chalila li Hashem me'asti zot hadam ha'anashim ha'ochim b'nafshotam v'lo aval lishtotam el asu shloshet ha'giborim." Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives? Meaning they could have been killed, so this water is like blood right now. And he would not drink it. These deeds performed the mighty men. The mighty men. Sorry, that's a typo. I must have forgot to copy and paste the N there. So there should be. Oh, I can just add an N, I guess. No, I can't. Okay, so here's the Divrei Hayamim. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it because it's not very significant changes like it was last time. But we are going to read the Malbim there because Malbim is a good review from what we did before and also explains some of the changes. So Vayardu Shlosha, the three went down. Achar HaShlosha Giborim Mimadrega Rishona, Hayu Od Shlosha Mimadrega Shnia. So he explains that the three that we learned about last week were like the highest level of the heroes, and these three are the second level of the heroes. Vahirosh Al HaShloshim Giborim Shechoshev B'Simanze. And they would be the head of the 30 heroes that, if you look at the full chapter, there's a whole bunch of names after this. That are thought of in this section. Because Niskar b'Shmuel Sham, and all this is also mentioned in Sefer Shmuel, so this is Malbim's commentary on Divrei Hayamim. Okay. V'sham be'arti shehayaza be'et nimshach David lamelech, and I explained there that this was all during the time that David was anointed as the king. Shalu plishtim ad emek Rephaim, samuch li'Yerushalayim, and the plishtim had made it all the way, the Philistines, to Emek Rephaim, which is near Jerusalem. But David halach el ma'arat Adullam v'hamitzuda. David went to this cave of Adullam in the fortress, samuch le'eretz Plishtim, which was near the land of the Philistines. As we learn, and this would be in 2 Samuel 5, Shmuel bet hey, uv'Shmuel amar v'yavo'u el k'tzir. And in Shmuel, it tells us about the harvest. It doesn't mention that it's a harvest time in Divrei Hayamim. Shehaya be'et ha'ktzir, that it was during the harvest time. Upo hodiya sheyardu, and here it says that they went down, so it doesn't use that language of going down to where he went down to. Ki ha'olech mi'Yerushalayim la'eretz Plishtim hu yored, because one who walks, who goes from Jerusalem to the land of the Philistines is a downward movement. Ubao el hatsur shesham ha'metzuda ve'hamara. And he came to the stronghold, I think, or the rock, that there was the fortress and the cave. Shmuel. And I explained the rest in Shmuel. So he's explaining to us how Divrei Hayamim adds a few details and leaves out a few things. Okay, so now we have this long Gemara, and it's actually very relevant to what we learned last week. So just to remind you, last week, one of the differences between Shmuel and Divrei Hayamim was that one mentioned a field of barley and the other mentioned a field of lentils. Okay? So this Gemara is going to combine what we learned last week with what we're doing this week and come up with some very interesting ideas. Okay. The verse states, "And David longed and said, Oh, that one would give me water to drink of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. And the three mighty men broke through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David, but he would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord." So that's what we read. The sages understood that David was not simply asking for water, but was using the term as a metaphor referring to Torah, and was raising a halachic dilemma. Okay, so there's a few places where we see Torah described as water. The first place is in Parshat Beshalach in Shmot, when after they leave Egypt and they've been wandering in the desert for 3 days. So it says that the people of Bnei Israel wanted water. It doesn't say they were thirsty. And that's where they have bitter waters, and Hashem tells Moshe how to throw a tree into the bitter water to make it sweet. It's very strange. And then it doesn't say that they drank the water, even after it was made sweet. Rather, it says, "Visham sam lo Torah u'mishpat." And there he taught them Torah and judgments. So it's very strange. So the commentaries say they had been wandering in the desert for 3 days. So it's 3 days since the splitting of the sea, since that mini revelation. I guess it wasn't mini, that revelation. And they thirsted for more Torah, for more revelation, Hashem. So that's what they got. They got Torah u'mishpat. They got laws and statutes. And we actually learn out from there that you should never go 3 days without Torah, because they had been wandering for 3 days. And that's why we have the set times of reading Torah Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos. So we never go more than 3 days without. Okay, so here's the halachic dilemma that the rabbis say David was working with. What is the dilemma that David is raising? Rava says that Rav Nachman says he was asking about the halacha with regard to a concealed article damaged by a fire. He wanted to know whether the halacha is in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that one is liable to pay for such damage, or whether the halacha is in accordance with the opinion of the rabbis, who hold that one is exempt from liability for damage by fire to concealed articles. So if you start a fire and you damage somebody's stuff, are you responsible for stuff that was hidden there that you had no idea was it or not? You might, if you are really interested in the halachic, how this evolves, you're going to have to read this a few times, because we're not going to spend a lot of time on it in this class, because we're only using it to understand Sefer Shmuel better, not to understand the halacha. And the sages in Bethlehem, okay, so does everyone see what happened? David wanted a halachic answer, so these three heroes went to Bethlehem not to draw water from a well or a cistern, but rather to meet with the Sanhedrin, to meet with the rabbis in Beit Lechem, in order to get the halachic answer that David wanted. Okay? So they gave him an answer, and the Gemara doesn't tell us what it was. Rav Huna stated a different explanation of the verse. There were stacks of barley belonging to Jews in which the Philistines were hiding, and David wanted to burn down the stacks to kill the Philistines and save his own life. He raised the dilemma. What is the halacha? Is it permitted to save oneself by destroying the property of another? So he would have to destroy Jewish property of the barley field in order to kill the plishtim that were using it as a shield for themselves. So could David halachically do that? And you see the qualitative difference between these two questions. So the first question really has nothing to do with the plishtim, with the Philistines. He's just asking, are you liable for hidden articles that are damaged by fire? This one is actually having to do with war and the plishtim. So what is the halacha? It is permitted to save oneself by destroying the prop. Is it permitted to destroy oneself by, is it permitted to save oneself by destroying the property of another? They sent the following answer to him. It is prohibited to save oneself by destroying the property of another. But you are king, and a king may breach the fence of an individual in order to form a path for himself, and none may protest his action. The normal halachot of damage do not apply to you since you are king. The rabbis, and some say it was Rabbi Bar Amari, give an alternative explanation of the dilemma and said, the stacks of barley belonged to Jews, and there were stacks of lentils, so there's our two fields from last week, belonging to the Philistines. David needed barley to feed his animals. And David raised the following dilemma. What is the halacha? I know that I may take the lentils belonging to a Gentile to feed my animals, but is it permitted to take a stack of barley belonging to a Jew to place before one's animal for it to consume with the intent to pay the owner of the barley with the stacks of lentils belonging to the Philistines? Okay, it's a complicated question. The sages of Bethlehem sent the following reply to him. If the wicked restore the pledge, give back that which he had taken by robbery, walk in the statutes of life, committing no iniquity, he shall surely live, he shall not die. This verse teaches that even though the robber repays the value of the stolen item, he is nevertheless considered to be wicked and is described as such in the verse. And a commoner would not be allowed to act as you asked, but you are king. So back to the same answer as before. And a king may breach the fence of an individual in order to form a path for himself, and none may protest his action. The Gemara discusses the different explanations. I think we're going to skip this. It really gets into the halacha. You can read it on your own if you want. So let's get to what happened. So David's given the halacha. That's normally it's forbidden, but because he is the king, it's permitted to him. Okay? Hi, how are you? Okay.
How are you?
Good. So we're in the middle of this long Gemara. The Gemara means, okay, so then we have a different issue. Where we learn, where David says he would not drink it, okay? Sorry. This is that is written, but he would not drink it. David said to himself, since there is a prohibition involved in this action, it is not satisfactory to me to act in this manner. Even though I'm allowed as king, I don't want to. But according to the one who says that David was raising a dilemma with regard to the halacha of a concealed article damaged by fire, so that was the first one that we mentioned. Phyllis, will you mute yourself? Sorry.
I'll mute myself, sorry.
Okay, no problem. Okay. So, since they sent him an answer that was a tradition with regard to the halacha, what is the meaning of, but he would not drink it? The Gemara answers, this means that he did not say the halacha in their names. Okay, so if you remember the first question, according to some of the rabbis that David was asking about halacha, it was about damaging hidden articles. It had nothing to do with saving lives or feeding animals or plishtim. It was just sort of like a more random thing that somebody, either on purpose or accidentally, set fire to a field and hidden articles were damaged by it. Is he responsible? So in that case, the issue of David being a king wasn't relevant because it would be the same halacha for anybody. So then we have to explain, but he would not drink it differently. So in the case where David could do it only because he was king, he would not drink it means he didn't want to take that prerogative. But in the first case, where it had nothing to do with David being a king, the Gemara answers, this means that he did not say the halacha in their names. So he gets back this halacha from these three men who snuck into Beit Lechem to speak to the rabbis there, but he doesn't quote them by name. We're going to see that expanded on a little bit. He did not transmit the ruling in the name of those who went in the time of battle, they put themselves in danger, to ask the sages what the halacha is. David said to himself, this is a tradition that I received from the court of Samuel of Ramah, so that's Shmuel. With regard to anyone who hands himself over to die for the sake of words of Torah, the sages do not say a matter of halacha in his name so that others will not follow this ruling and endanger their lives. Meaning there was no reason for these heroes, these giborim, to risk their lives to get the halacha for David. And so we don't want other people, although they did it and it might be praiseworthy, we don't want other people to follow in their actions, so we don't name them. Let's actually read this Maharasha before we finish quickly because it's relevant to that. So the Maharasha is a Acharon who comments on the Agadot. He also comments on the Halachot of the Gemara, but one of the few people who comments on the more storyline parts. So this is not practical halacha, this Gemara that we're reading right now. It's really a story. So he says, Nireh v'zeh, dekol ha'omer davar v'shem, omro, mevi ge'ula l'olam. So we have another tradition that says anybody who quotes a teaching by the name of the person they got it from brings redemption into the world. So how can David not attribute who he learned this from? V'ilish yisamchu al hanes, but if they were relying on a miracle, leilech b'makom sakanat nefashot, going to a place where they could die, ein ra'ui lasot nes v'ge'ula al yedehem, then it's not suitable to do a miracle or a redemption by way of them. Ve'afagav deshluchei mitzvah, even if they're being sent on a mitzvah, eina nizukin. Even though one who is sent on a mission to do a mitzvah is not damaged, this is why when you go to Israel, people might give you dollar bills, or you might give other people dollar bills, because you're on a mission to do a mitzvah, to give tzedakah, and so you won't be damaged. That's what that means. Hecha deshchicha hazika. Here, since they went into a battlefield, essentially, and they were actually very likely to be hurt or damaged, shani, it's different. So, meaning, usually we attribute anything to the person that we heard it from, and you can actually bring the ge'ula, bring the redemption through this. But in this case, redemption is not going to come through somebody putting their lives in danger where they're actually likely to get hurt. Okay. Any questions? I hope that was clear. Okay, so back to the
question. Yeah. I have a question. I don't think it's related. It's more about the halakha. So if my house is burning and I'm running out of it to save myself, I can't jump over my neighbor's fence if it would damage it?
Oh, that's different. In this case, I think David wasn't in, I don't know, again, it's not a halachic text, even though it sounds like a halachic text.
I was going to say, like, you can't damage something.
Right. I think the
process of saving yourself.
Right. You might.
I'm thinking about why we might have to do that.
I think let's reword it a little bit. If you damage something in the process of saving yourself, you would still be liable for those damages.
Right.
Okay.
Just pay my neighbor for the fence.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, but that's
when my tree fell on it, but it was not because I was trying to save myself from
right. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara asked another question. The verse states, he poured it out to the Lord, which indicates that David acted stringently and did not rely on the lenient ruling that he received, that because he was king, he could do whatever he wanted, essentially. Granted, according to the one who says either of these two explanations, that David asked either about burning the stacks of barley or about replacing their value with lentils. He poured out the water to God due to the fact that he acted for the sake of heaven and did not rely on the lenient ruling he had received. But according to the one that who says that David asked about a concealed article damaged by fire, what is the reason that he poured out the water to the Lord? Gemara answers, the reason is that they said this halacha in the name of the tradition without associating it with any specific individual. Okay, so the Gemara completely metaphorizes this whole thing. There's no actual water. He wanted actual halachic ruling, and these three giborim, heroes, went out to get the halachic ruling, which then came back to say either that whatever it was they said, we don't even know the answer to that one about damaging property, or that because he was king, he could do whatever he wanted. So in the case of the damaging hidden property, we say pouring it out meant that he didn't attribute. In the case of the lentils and the barley situation, and whether or not he had the prerogative of the king to do whatever he want, even though it went against the halacha for the common man, he didn't take the leniency and he wouldn't do what he wanted to do, even though he was king. Okay, so now, those of you who have been learning with me for a while, this is my favorite when I find one of these. So this is the Chashukei Chemed, which is Rav Zilberstein. I'm always unsure if I pronounce that right or if I'm even giving the right Latin name. And he has a few collections of different books. His most famous is actually translated into English. It's called V'ha'arevna. And he's a Rav who gets a lot of questions, or he might make up some of the questions. And he organized in V'ha'arevna all of the questions and the answers that he gave according to the Parsha, so how they would be relevant in the Parsha. So from one of my favorites was from last week's Parsha, where it was a volunteer in the hospital who had volunteered to hold babies in the NICU. And he asked the question to the Rav that one of the babies he was holding was named Esav. And he found out that the parents were named Yitzchak and Rivka. So it was an actual Yitzchak and Rivka who married each other. And that they had twins, and they were so delighted by them being Yitzchak and Rivka and the fact that they had twins that they named their twins Yaakov and Esav. And little Esav, unfortunately, was not doing so well and was in the NICU and is being held by this volunteer who was really disturbed by the fact that he was holding a little Jewish Esav. So he asked the Rav if it would be okay to encourage them to change the name. So it was actually relevant to our learning of Sefer Shmuel, because Shaul, King Saul, actually, there's a weird pasuk where it says he gives his daughter Michal, who's married to David, to a man named Paltiel. And it's very strange. We won't get into it now. But Paltiel, Rav Zilberstein uses as the example, is also the name of one of the Meraglim, one of the spies that go out to the land of Israel to check it out and come out with a bad report. So he was seen as evil because he was one of the spies who gave a bad report. So he uses that an example of a righteous man, the Paltiel in Sefer Shmuel, having the same name as a wicked man, the spy, in Parshat Shlach. Okay, so he says, therefore, it's technically okay, but he ends the answer by saying, I really think you should encourage them to change this baby's name. Okay, so that's an example of one of the crazy questions he gets. So this, Chashukei Chamed, rather than being according to the Parsha, he takes a few Masechtot of Gemara and he organizes questions and answers he receives according to the topics in the Gemara. Okay, so this is based on Kevan De'ika Isura Lo Nichali. So David says, because there's an aspect of prohibition, I don't want to take the lenient opinion that says I can do it as king. And here's the question. It was a really good, interesting question. I think you guys will like it. Okay. Kibel b'matos et hamana hakshera she'adam she'eino shomer Torah v'hu achal lo kasher. So here's the situation. He received on an airplane the meal portion, the kosher meal, of a man that doesn't keep Torah mitzvot, and he ate a non-kosher. Okay, it'll become clear in the question. So here's the question, the she'ela. Ma'aseh be'avrech tamid chacham. So here is a yeshiva bacher, somebody who learns in yeshiva. Shetas le-Mexico. Reading these types of words are the hardest thing, right? That says Mexico. So he got on an airplane and flew to Mexico. Bechavrat te'ufa shel nochrim, with a non-Jewish airline company. So he was not flying El Al. Hu hizmin mazon kasher. He had ordered a kosher meal. Af mishum ma ha-hazmana lo higia. But for whatever reason, his order didn't arrive. Ra'az zot Yehudi she'eno shomer Torah. Another Jew on the airplane, who was totally secular, saw that this poor yeshiva bacher didn't have a kosher meal. Viter almanato. So this secular Jew gave up his portion, his kosher portion. Shehaita glat kosher. It was glat. Behu achal mana regila lo kshera. And the secular Jew ate one of the regular airline meals that was not kosher. Natan et manato kshera la'avrech. And he gave his kosher meal to the yeshiva bacher. A very nice gesture, right? V'sirev ha'avrech lekabel v'lo achla. But the yeshiva bacher refused to accept it, and he didn't eat. V'amar, and he said, Eineni yochol la'achol manak shera glat, k'shebiglali achal yodi mazon lo kasher. How can I possibly eat a glat kosher meal when it was because of me that another Jew is eating non-kosher food? Ha'im nahag ha'ben Torah kadin? Did this yeshiva bacher act appropriately? It's a good question, right? Could he eat it? Okay, so Rav Zilberstein's answer. Min hadin haya mutar lo le'achol. So from the letter of the law, he was actually permitted to eat this meal, this kosher meal. Kevan shehasheni kvar achal et hamazon halo kosher. Because the secular Jew had already eaten his non-kosher food. V'im lo yochal hamazon yizrak. And if he wouldn't have eaten the kosher food, it would have been thrown out. Aval b'zeh shelo achal kidei shem shamayim. But because he didn't eat, he actually made a kiddush Hashem. He sanctified the name of God. U'ki'inyan ha-ne'amar b'David, and this is just like what's written about David HaMelech. V'yomer David, chalila li miasotze. David said, by God, I would never do this. V'lo ava David lishtotam. And David did not want to drink it. V'yasach otam la'ashem. And they poured it as libation to God. Ki masru nafsham al kach shelo kadin. Because they risked their lives in a way that they shouldn't have. Umivuar bevavakama daf samach aleph amud aleph. And it says in our Gemara, Shamar kevan de'ika isura lo nicha. Since there is an aspect of prohibition, I don't want to do it. V'kol shekin kan, and all the more so here, shenaase chet biglal hamazon hakasher shekibel, where somebody actually sinned because of the kosher food that they received. Okay? It's a very interesting question and answer. It really relates to our chapter and what David, and it really gives you a richer feeling of David's decision not to drink that water and to pour it as libation before God. Okay, so now that we read that big metaphor of how it wasn't really water, it was actually halacha, and they didn't go to the well, they actually went to the Sanhedrin, the group of rabbis. Now we get into the medieval commentaries and even modern commentaries that take it more at its literal face value. So Radak says, Mishkeni mayim, oh, that I would want this water. Kemashma'o, take it as its face value. He wanted this water that was dear and good. And why does it tell us it was during the harvest? Because the harvest season is the end of the summer, okay? And it would be really hot, and anybody would desire cold water. Ulai b'mitsuda shehaya sham David lo hayu sham mayim tovim. And maybe in the fortress they didn't have good water. V'achar sheheviu otam, but after they brought him the water, nitcharet al samu atzmam shloshet ha'gibrim ha'ele b'sakana gdola. David regretted it that these three heroes had placed themselves in such great danger, b'avur ta'avoto al hamayim, for his desire for water. And the Malbim says, V'David hita'aveh l'mayim mibor beit lechem. Notice how he spells it as the cistern, not as the well. So David desired the water from the cistern of Beit Lechem. V'asher gar ze mikarov bebeit lechem, haya ragil b'mayim hahem. So since that's near where he lived, he was used to that water. Okay, so back to the Radak. So he says, "V'lo avalishtotam." He didn't want to drink them. Shaya choshev b'nafsho ilushatotam ki ilushatad damam ki b'nafshotam heviom. So he thought to himself, "If he were to drink this water, it would be like drinking their blood, because they basically gave their lives to bring it to them, even though they survived." Ve'yasach otam l'Hashem, and he poured it out as a libation before God. Klomar shafcham la'aretz. He poured it onto the ground. L'shem Hashem, in the name of Hashem, ki lo haya sham mizbeach. There was no mizbeach. So it wasn't like he was making an actual libation on an altar. There was no altar, mizbeach. Uma shekatvu razal, and that which our rabbis wrote, which is what we read, the whole big Gemara, b'inyan zeh, in this matter, hem dvarim shel tema. So the Radak does not like it. He says these are very questionable things that the rabbis wrote. Ki chavru shnei ha'inyanim ha'ele ke'echad. They combine two totally different matters. I think he's talking about the lentils and the barley, and our paragraph, which are totally separate incidences, and they combine them as if they're one. V'ayu v'shnei mekamot, and they were even in two different places. Ki davar chalkat ha-sadeh, the whole thing with the portion of the field, the lentils and the barley, haya be'efes damim, was in this place called efes damim. V'davar hamayim haya be'marat adulam, and this thing with the water was in our cave of Adulam that we talked about. V'hem perush, and they explain, mi ashkeni mayim derech mashal. They explain the whole thing by way of a parable. Ki hamayim hem ha-Torah, because the water is Torah. Just like it says, anybody who's thirsty should bring him to water, meaning if they desire spirituality, bring him to Torah. I put this in small print because it is the Gemara that we just read. And the Radak says, in his usual style, this is his approach to learning Torah, that that whole Gemara that we just read is very far from the simple contextual meaning of the text. Because our verses are the story of these heroes that were with David, and they tell the tale of the heroic things that they did, each one of the three first, umasha asu shloshet ha'achronim, and the second group of three, behaviyam hamayim, in bringing the water. Ve'lo haya she'elat halacha bechalka, and it wasn't a halachic matter. Aval milchama gedola haya, this was a serious war with the plishtim. Ad shenas Yisrael mipnei plishtim, until Israel was actually hiding at that time period and fleeing from the plishtim. Kmo she'amar katuv, just like the pasuk there say. And it was literally a battle, and they stood their ground, and they saved the field, and they didn't burn it, and the plishtim couldn't burn it. And it says that they smote the plishtim. And it also says Hashem gave a great salvation. There's no other way to understand this except for the simple contextual meaning. It's interesting when the medieval rabbis really argue against the rabbinic, the Talmudic rabbis in terms of their parables and their metaphoric understanding of things, because a lot of these medieval rabbis just wanted to understand the simple meaning and the context. And then he just goes on to give more examples of why it's wrong. And then he says, V'yesh mirabotenu, there's another example from our rabbis, Shepeirish devrim ela kemashma'an, who actually do explain this according to the simple meaning. I didn't see where it was in the original. I just have it from this Radak. Shenitaveh David lamayim, David did desire water. But why did David desire water? Because it was Sukkot. And that's where we're commanded in the Torah on Sukkot to specifically have water libations as opposed to wine. So then he goes on, okay, so what did David do? Because, and he has to explain that there, he was allowed to put up a bama. Bama is the same word as bima, so kind of like an elevated place where you could, an individual could do sacrifices outside of, at this point, it would only be the tabernacle. The temple was not standing. Once the temple was built and standing, these individual bamot, high places, whatever they were no longer allowed. So he's explaining how David was allowed to make a bama. And he was able to pour out this water as a libation for Sukkot on this bama. So then they would say, why did he send out three? So this is saying that he actually intentionally sent out the three men in this very dangerous situation to get water so that he could, on his own personal bama, make these water libations. So why did he send out three? Echad haya horeg, one would kill, ve'echad haya mefaneh haharugim, and the other would get rid of the slain people, ve'echad machnis tsluchit betara, and the other one, I think, would have the pure vessel in order to get the water. V'divrei ele krovim min harishonim, and these words are a little closer to the pshat than the first ones, the one that, the very long one that we read. Okay, and then he says what the Aramaic translation is. Okay, so what did we learn here? So again, we're learning how differently the simple explanation is from the parable explanation. We're also learning, I think, in both cases, whether you understand it on the simple level of the actual words, that three men went out and tried to satisfy David's thirst for this specific water, or whether they went out to get a halachic ruling. You see the greatness of David HaMelech as a leader in his regret for uttering that out loud and understanding the responsibility of the leader of what he can and can't say. And even with the rabbis, far-fetched as the Radak describes description of the halacha, that David didn't want to give himself special privileges as the king, and he wanted to do everything by both the letter and the spirit of the law, and his fidelity to Torah and halacha, even during these dangerous, really down times for him when he could have taken exception and done things for himself. So whether you understand it on the literal level that David desired this specific water and his men went out to satisfy that desire and he regretted it, or whether it's a desire for halacha and David could have observed the halacha in a different way because he was king and he chose not to, we see the greatness of David HaMelech in his leadership and hope that other leaders can learn from him and his example. So thank you, everybody, for coming.